our state struggles. It's well known West Virginia is one of the materially least well-off states in the country. And the job of the attorney general should be to protect the public interest and to protect the people in the state that they represent. Morrissey's just doing the exact opposite. He is really attacking what is a lifeline to our people and to our economy.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. I generally steer clear of candidates for office on the show, but I spoke recently with Sam Petsonk, who's running for Attorney General of West Virginia against the Republican incumbent Patrick Morrissey. Since Morrissey has spent his time in office wading into national battles on the wrong side, I'd love to see him defeated. Sam is a labor lawyer who's been helping West Virginians for years. He was also formerly a legislative assistant for two Democratic senators from West Virginia. He'd be a vast improvement for his state and for the rest of us. Sam and I had a good conversation about why he entered this race, what he'd like to change in West Virginia, and how his race fits in nationally. He's a candidate worth your support. So, after a quick word with our sponsor, my interview with Sam Petsonk, Democrat for Attorney General in West Virginia.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from TimePlots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. TimePlots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Hi, Sam. Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm Sam Petsonk. I'm the Democratic nominee for Attorney General here in West Virginia. I'm a ninth generation West Virginian. I was born up in Morgantown in north central West Virginia, and I attended school, you know, partly at WV, West Virginia University, then up in at Brandeis University up in Boston. And I came to live in southern West Virginia right after college. And that was working through the AmeriCorps program, the VISTA program, which is an anti-poverty and sort of community development program down there in a little town called Mullins. And I worked there on land use, community development. You know, that's southern West Virginia. The coal industry was really big in that part of our state for decades and decades. And beginning in the 80s, when steel turned down and American manufacturing, you know, took a turn for the south, we lost a lot of our coal production. And a lot of our southern counties lost 50% of their population or more in a few short years. A lot of work on protecting healthcare, retirement healthcare, and healthcare facilities in those southern counties. They lost most of the wage base in many areas there through the 80s and the 90s. So that's what I was doing starting back in around 06. And I did that for about a year. And then through that work, representing coal miners or advocating for coal miners and the community there, I was able to get an opportunity to work for our Senator Robert C. Byrd up in Washington. And so I worked for Senator Byrd the last about three years that he was with us in the United States Senate. And then when he passed away, I eventually came back to West Virginia and I worked for a nonprofit legal services program about 6 years, representing coal miners, working on similar sorts of issues that actually to what I had done in the VISTA program, helping people to try to hold on to healthcare and build up their communities and find a way to improve infrastructure. You know, it's the sort of the classic conundrum of rural American development in the 21st century. That's kind of what I've been up to for the past dozen years or so.
Sounds like you picked up a law degree along the way there.
I did. Too. I picked up a law degree, yes, as well. Really, a lot of the work that I do is administrative. I'm not a personal injury lawyer. I mostly handle federal litigation and administrative cases, benefits cases for coal miners in the federal Black Lung Benefits Program. We do a good bit of federal district court litigation on severance pay and retirees' health care under the federal WARN and ERISA laws. I'm pretty engaged in that type of work. And then, of course, for the past year, I've been running this campaign. I got into this race because a lot of the people that I work with in the rural health clinics and the unions and the community development world, they said our state has lacked a concerted legal leadership, you know, for the last 8 years. And I can talk more about, you know, how I got into the race, but it's really a product of the community work that I've done for the last decade or so.
What does it mean to you to be a ninth generation West Virginian? That's a lot of generations. I don't think I can trace my family back that far, not even close.
That's on my mom's side of the family. Our folks go back a long ways here. My dad's side of the family is newcomers. They moved to America probably in the 19-teens, most of them. So part of his family dates back farther. But, you know, here's the point of that. And the reason it's an important element of my identity in a state like West Virginia, we were settled late. The town of Mullins, where I worked in AmeriCorps, was really not settled by white folks until the 19-teens. And before that, there were still some Native Americans living around that area. The railroads did not come through those central Appalachian counties until well after the Civil War. West Virginia changed a lot in the early part of the 20th century with the late phase of industrialization that sort of came here after soldiers in the Civil War discovered our mineral deposits, our coal reserves. And so it means something that, you know, families that have been in West Virginia before that all happened, they have a longer memory that attaches to the agricultural past in our state that sort of reflects an awareness about the extra industrial identity, the parts of West Virginia that don't relate directly to coal. I think people want to know that as a West Virginian, I understand and my family has a memory that lasts through our industrial era, but also that encompasses something beyond that. You know, our state has a complex and a sort of a very layered identity that the people want to understand. They want to know, do you understand what makes West Virginia tick? And it's more than our coal industry. Our coal industry is very important. I work for miners, coal miners for a living, you know, but there's a lot more to West Virginia. There's a deeper history here that predates all the industrial outside investment that developed our resources for the last 100 years in West Virginia. And I think people want to know that you come from that, you understand it, and that's why I make a point to mention it.
What's happening in West Virginia these days? What do you care about? What's happening good and bad?
Well, look, you know, like a lot of places around the country, we've lost our industrial base over the last 20, 30 years in West Virginia. The steel mills have closed down. We used to have the largest steel operations in West Virginia. We had probably 30,000 steel workers in a single company up north in West Virginia that was an employee-owned company back in the early 80s. I mean, we had strong unions and a major industrial output, and that for a whole variety of, you know, global trade dynamics and everything else in the 80s, that all kind of started falling apart on us. And so we're like a lot of states in that regard. And we've struggled through figuring out what comes next. And it's hit us hard because we were developed so late. We don't have the sort of the deep history of agricultural and economic diversity that other states have that have been affected by deindustrialization. So it's hit us hard. We were always a lower income state and less developed state. And so the deindustrialization is real challenge for us here. And we don't have the roadways and we don't have the intermodal, you know, river to rail that many other places have. So that's the long challenge of West Virginia over the last 2 decades or so. That's the hard part. But the good part about our state is that we've got really sharp people. We've got some of the most skilled laborers. We've got really good, energetic young folks. So we have a lot on the horizon. And that's what I'm focused on in my race. There's a lot to do to strengthen the future for West Virginia.
When I was younger in politics, West Virginia was a solid Democratic state. It had Byrd, who you worked for, and Rockefeller as senators. It was considered a blue state for presidential elections. It hasn't been for a while. What happened?
I remember sitting on my bedroom floor in 2000, listening to the Bush v. Gore returns. And that was the beginning of the change in West Virginia. You know, Al Gore was a complicated character. And, you know, West Virginia felt very threatened in the 90s by the change in environmental sensibilities that were really directing some concern towards our coal business. And look, our coal business was poised to begin a structural decline around the year 2000 because of the depletion of our coal reserves, you know, and it was declining here for a whole variety of reasons totally unrelated to the Kyoto Protocol or any of that. But people understood the sensitivity and understood that we hadn't really quite diversified our economy well enough to withstand that decline. So we pushed back. You're right. Our legislature had been Democratic wall to wall for 83 years up until 2014. And we started voting for Republicans at the presidential level in 2000 because George Bush said, I'm going to fight for the coal industry and the steel industry. And he did. He did some work on the steel tariff and otherwise. So our state has had a complicated and evolving identity that's all bound up in trying to muck our way through this post-industrial contraction. So we've tried to go Republican here at the legislative level. They pushed for tort reform. They tried, to support small business. There are different competing philosophies about how you best do that, how you navigate your way through deindustrialization. Like a lot of states, there's no silver bullet. And so for my part, I think that our attorney general can play a role in antitrust enforcement, in protecting our small businesses, in promoting access to health care for wage earners around West Virginia so that we can get a toehold on a new economy. I can talk more about why I think that the Democratic approach to law enforcement and policymaking is the right one for my race at this time. But that's sort of the backdrop as to how we lost our strong wall-to-wall Democratic majority starting in about 2000. We're still a majority Democratic state when it comes to voter registration. And over the last decade, I want to tell people, we have lost Democrats, but the Republican Party has not gained registrants in West Virginia. The independent registration is what has grown. And people are upset with both parties, frankly. And that's where I'm focused. Democrats lost traction because we didn't deliver a clear, compelling agenda for the 21st century. And we've got to do better at that to earn back the support of voters in states like Pennsylvania and West Virginia and Ohio and Kentucky and North Carolina and southwestern Virginia. We've got to do better. And I think we are. I think you're seeing that my success and my momentum in my race reflects the good ideas coming out of the Democratic candidates and the Democratic Party in Central Appalachia in the Mid-Atlantic region these days.
When you run for office, I mean, a lot of times you take a look at the incumbent and you find something wanting, or you have some sense that you can represent the state better in that position. What is it about Morrissey that you don't think is quite right for the state?
Patrick Morrissey is the reason I got into this race. He rode a wave of frustration that I've just described, and he was elected on that basis. He ran against a multi-term incumbent Democrat in this office, and there was a perception that the Democrats hadn't done what they needed to deliver results in the 21st century. So we understand why Morrissey came in, but look at who he is and what he's done over the last 8 years. Morrissey was essentially a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry before he moved to West Virginia, apparently for the purpose of seeking this office. Our state, our Democratic Attorney General, understanding that we in West Virginia were suffering more from the opioid overprescription problem, the overdose problem, our state was the first in the nation to file a lawsuit against some of the major opioid manufacturers and distributors. And Morrissey moved here and took over that lawsuit and those lawsuits. And I, in my view, tried to shut them down and settle them for pennies on the dollar. And he masqueraded as a Republican trying to shake up the order here in West Virginia, and he was elected twice with that sort of promise. But what he's done while he's been in office is to sell us out to those pain pill companies. People here understand. They see now what has happened and what his real agenda has been. And to beat it all, he has gotten West Virginia into a lawsuit to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which brought health insurance to more people in West Virginia on a per capita basis than it did any other state in the nation. So we have hundreds of thousands of people in West Virginia who have received health insurance, health care through the Medicaid expansion and otherwise. And Morrissey filed a lawsuit that would undo all of that for our people. And people with pre-existing conditions are all over our state. We've had an industrial economy. A lot of people have got bad backs and bad health and high blood pressure and diabetes and high cholesterol and COPD and black lung disease. Morrissey's attacking healthcare for all of those people. I was there. I watched the Affordable Care Act come into existence in the United States Congress, and it has improved the lives of hundreds of thousands of people in our state. And I'm in this race because I'll be damned if I'm going to let a guy like Morrissey come in here and take all of that away from us and use our state to take away those achievements and those services that the ACA is providing all across our country. West Virginia is not going to be responsible for doing that to America. And that's really my focus. And it's the reason I think Morrissey's going to lose this race. He's too far wrong on that issue.
What do you think that Morrissey's motivation is? I mean, he ran for U.S. Senate. He had national ambitions. A lot of these positions he's taken seem like they would be good for raising money on the right, maybe help with his position with the pharmaceutical companies or other elements of that coalition. But why would he be attacking the Obamacare, et cetera?
Let me take a step back and say, I'll never forget when Joe Biden left the United States Senate. He gave a speech, a farewell speech on the floor of the Senate, and he told a story about George Mitchell. When Biden first came to the Senate, Mitchell oriented the young senators, and he said, you know, in the Senate, we question people's conclusions, and we may disparage people's conclusions, but we don't question their motives, or we don't disparage their motives. I think there's real value in political discourse to adhering. I'll never forget Biden giving that speech and passing on that principle of political discourse. So I'm not here to say that I think Patrick Morrissey has got any particular dastardly motive. I don't know his mind and his heart, but what I can tell you is that, you know, what he has done in West Virginia has redounded to the political advantage of the Republican Party and nothing else. I mean, he has tried to propose a bill in the West Virginia legislature that would replace the ACA, that would provide protections for kids up to age 26, people up to age 26, that would protect people with pre-existing conditions. I mean, he wants to take credit for all of these good programs that are helping millions of Americans. It seems like the only objective for trying to repeal the ACA is so that Republicans can come in and enact the same programs and start taking political credit for them. To me, it's purely a political exercise. I think the Republicans are kicking themselves that they didn't cooperate in enacting the Affordable Care Act. I think it was a political mistake of epic proportions that's going to hurt that party for generations to come, but they're stuck with it, and they're not going to use West Virginia to wiggle their way out of that massive mistake.
How would you characterize your own motivations, which seems like a more fair thing to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, my motivations are to protect the people of West Virginia. You know, like I say, we've got billions of dollars in healthcare and healthcare jobs in a very economically challenged state that we have here today because of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, our state struggles. It's well known West Virginia is one of the materially least well-off states in the country. And the job of the Attorney General should be to protect the public interest and to protect the people in the state that they represent. Morrissey's just doing the exact opposite. He is really attacking what is a lifeline to our people and to our economy when he attacks these federal dollars, federal healthcare dollars. So I'm in this race for one simple purpose, which is really what I think the Democratic Party has always been all about at its best, and certainly the job of the Attorney General to protect what our people have earned, to defend our basic rights, healthcare, fair wages, the right to be free from discrimination, the right to have fair competition in business. This is what our antitrust laws stand for. It's what our consumer protection laws stand for. It's what our criminal law and our Constitution represents. Those are the principles that the attorneys general around the country are here to defend. And it's the offices of the attorneys general around this country really have never been more important, because these rights have probably never been under as great an assault as they are right now. So that's why you see so much attention driving towards the offices of the attorneys general from New York to Minnesota to Pennsylvania to North Carolina, you know, to Oregon to California to Illinois. We've got great attorneys general all over this country fighting to defend these rights. And I hope to join them. I think West Virginia needs that.
What do you think the biggest misconception might be about your opponent and about you?
I think the public understands my opponent pretty well. They see him for what he is. He was understood to be on the side of coal miners and West Virginians back when he first ran for office. But we've had over 100 coal-fired power plants closed down in America since President Trump took office. We've had a dozen or more coal companies file for bankruptcy since Patrick Morrisey came into office. And Morrisey has not done a lick to protect the real human beings who have suffered because of that downturn in the coal business. He might have fought with the EPA over some environmental matters, but he's got nothing to show for that. You know, that fight was really misplaced, and he hasn't been in bankruptcy court fighting for mine workers and fighting for retirees and fighting for our communities. That's what a real advocate would do for coal miners and for industrial workers all over this country. Help to build back our industries where we can, but certainly fight for the people that have earned a living in these industries. And so it was a misperception, I think, for the public to believe that Morrisey would lift a finger to really protect our workers. And then as far as the misperceptions about me, I'm not a politician. Most of the public, buddy, doesn't even know who I am yet in West Virginia. But when we tell them about me and we remind them about Morrisey, I think it's really inspiring that most people in this state say, yeah, that's the guy we want in this office. You know, and the race is really looking strong for me because of that fact that, Morrisey can say whatever he wants about the Democratic Party, and rest assured, he's tried to say that I refuse to denounce the defund the police movement and all these things. He's tried to imply that I'm out of sync with the values of West Virginians, but he knows it's just the opposite is the case, that in fact, I believe in what the vast majority of West Virginians believe. We got to protect what our people have earned. We got to give our people a fair shot in life and defend the health care and the rights that will give us a toehold for a better life. If I've got a misperception working against me, it's something Morrisey's trying to say. Of course, it's Republicans across the country try to say that Democrats are radical, that they're out to get us. And it's just a bold-faced lie because they've got nothing better to say about us.
As I understand politics, a lot of it is about a coalition. Who are the groups and people that you align yourself with in the state? Who is out there promoting your candidacy and working towards defeating Morrisey and putting you in place?
Well, ordinary citizens is the main starting point for that question. And where do those citizens work and where do they reside? I've worked hard across our state for the last decade or more to support economic opportunity in the cities and in the old post-industrial regions, which in West Virginia, that's the southern counties. So I think that what have we done in those areas to build networks and build support? We have worked with the union movement. We have worked with the healthcare business, the rural health clinics, the federally qualified health centers that have brought healthcare under the ACA to thousands of communities across rural America. Those are doctors, those are nurses, those are counselors and addiction treatment counselors and services that have changed people's lives for the better across this country. Those clinics are there because of the ACA today and the relationships that flow through our nonprofit healthcare system in this country have changed people's lives for the better. And of course, at a neighbor-to-neighbor level, I think a lot of those service providers and a lot of the patients in those clinics, they understand who's been there supporting them. And I think those relationships just mean an immense amount to people. So, I've also got folks in the nonprofit legal services community I've worked with. I've represented hundreds, probably thousands of working people across West Virginia. I believe in nonprofit legal services. I believe we've improved a lot of lives in this state and that those networks are working for me. Some of those are union workers. A lot of them are non-union workers. I represent a lot of non-union people because we've got a lot of non-union workers in West Virginia now. We're still a pretty good union state. Density is really great in the mine workers and in the coal business relative to other industries in this country. But in sum, we've got the healthcare community, we've got the union community, we've got the client community that I've reached and organized and worked with through nonprofit legal services. And then we've got the Democratic Party, which is still a strong force in this state. We still got a lot of Democratic officials at the local level. People respect those voices. Those are grocery store owners and convenience store operators and people that have been Democrats for decades and decades. And we've got those types of people all across this country. I think the coalition that I just described is present in most every mid-Atlantic state and probably most every state in the union because of the ACA, because of the faithful Democratic leaders at the community level, and because of the union movement. And those are the ingredients, I think, of progress for our people. And those are the ingredients of a majority for Democrats in many states.
Anyone running to unseat an incumbent in most elections, it's a tough road. And it's also particularly tough if you're running in a state that the top of the ticket is projected to go to the other party than you're running on. It's just always a big effort to distinguish what you want to do personally from party issues in an age of such polarization. How do you go about establishing your own particular public persona and policy positions in an age where everyone wants to simplify things down to us versus them?
Two things. First of all, the office that I'm seeking is, you know, separate from the legislature. People have some understanding that it is an independent office that's more about law enforcement and law and order than it is about legislating or about, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and President Obama and all of these figures that have become such flashpoints in the political discourse, or President Trump for that matter. You know, I have many supporters who are supporting President Trump, and they're supporting me because they understand what the office of the Attorney General is here to do. It's to protect our people. So I think that this office is a great opportunity for Democrats to show our true colors and win back trust. But I couldn't do that if there wasn't another ingredient in this race that was working in my favor. And that's my opponent. We've given Republicans a chance to govern in many of our states, and they are their own worst enemies. Morrissey has made this race possible for me by doing the things that he has done for the last 8 years. Thank goodness we still have a viable free press in West Virginia. We have independent newspapers that have actually won Pulitzer Prize recognition for the reporting that they've done on Patrick Morrissey and the opioid crisis. And the public has read that reporting. And, you know, it shows you that the value of the press, because the public understands more than I could ever pay for them to understand with any kind of paid media campaign in a political race. They understand more than the union movement can teach through our you know, organizing. 8 years of good scrutiny of the failings of the Republican leadership is probably the main thing that will enable me to deliver this race. I'm bringing these other networks. I'm bringing the healthcare community. I'm bringing the union community. I'm bringing the nonprofit legal services and all of our clients and all the great organizing that we've done there. You know, those are powerful forces, but they're additive to a base of public understanding that you got to have in a state like West Virginia. I think we've given the Republicans a chance. And when we have a good, viable press that in a state like ours that explains these failings to the public, that opens the door more than anything.
The view that I have from outside of West Virginia is that Morrissey's not really a normal attorney general, that he's more of an outlandish figure, that he's way on the right, and that he's, you know, grandstanding a lot. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And I hear that from Republicans, not only Republicans across West Virginia, but Republicans across this country, who say that Morrissey is holding back bipartisan progress on public interest litigation across this country. I think the entire nation is trying to get rid of Patrick Morrissey. He's a blight on our country, and he is well known for being that way. That's what I mean when I say You got to pick these races. When people like Morrissey win a race, give them a chance to govern and work with your press, you know, to explain what's actually happening. And his true colors have shown themselves here, I think. And there's a broad interest in getting rid of him.
There's a group that works to help elect Democratic Attorney Generals DAGA. Do you get support from them? Are they helpful at all?
They have been immensely helpful. In fact, I talked to some of the Democratic Attorneys General or their representatives, you know, before I got into this race. I understand that committee has grown in importance as this office has become more important in the last couple of election cycles. And they're really sharp. They were right on the money. They were here in West Virginia to talk with me and talk about the race. And I had a theory about this race, and I understood we were going to be able to win it. And they're a sophisticated outfit, and the party needs that, because this office is too important right now not to have that kind of serious, heavy-hitting presence across the country strategizing, raising the resources. They've been an immense, an important partner all the way throughout the past year and a half I've been in this race. And they're helping me very much so day to day. Absolutely. We've got great attorneys general. Look, we've got Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania. We've got Josh Stein in North Carolina. We've got Brian Frosch, Carl Racine. We've got Tish James up in New York. We've got Mara Healy in Massachusetts. We've got, you know, all across this country, great attorneys general of various different political persuasions, you know, and we don't always see eye to eye with them, of course, on every issue. But that's the Democratic Party for you, you know, and we understand that the unifying principle is that we're always out to protect the public interest, to protect the vast majority of working people in this country. And I'm really honored to have the chance to join their number.
Most people don't follow, you know, who in particular their attorney general is, or a lot of the policies that are affected by the choices that the attorney general makes. What would change if you were able to replace Morrissey as the West Virginia State Attorney General?
The biggest thing is that I would prominently argue against repealing the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court has scheduled the oral argument in the Texas case, the case to repeal the Affordable Care Act, for the Monday following this November's election. I think the Supreme Court did that for a reason, because they know it's an intensely political lawsuit that the Republican attorneys general are pushing for purely political purposes, essentially. And I'm not saying it's a frivolous lawsuit, but I'm saying that it's a very political lawsuit. I want my race to send a message publicly and across this country that the people of West Virginia want to save the Affordable Care Act, want to save the hundreds of thousands of citizens who have health insurance today. It is the most important thing in my race, and people will see a change. I hope they'll see a change, you know, in the litigation position for West Virginia, and hopefully a better outcome at the Supreme Court. But of course, across the board, I'm going to fight for our businesses. I'm going to fight for better broadband access. I'm going to fight for really solving problems. And I tell you, most specifically, and people need to think about this too, across the country, the attorney general in most every state has an important role to play with the healthcare regulators in setting reimbursement rates and helping to build the budget for the healthcare system in our states all across America. Rural hospitals are closing at a frightening clip. And that's a lot of complicated reasons there, but the attorney general needs to be an active partner with the medical community, you know, to protect that healthcare delivery system. And I will be there. And I think the medical community in my state understands that I am with them on that, and I'll be an active partner to defend our hospitals and our health clinics. And that will be a substantial economic impact that people will see, because I'll be aggressive on it. And I'll be a partner for the business community. It's a win-win for our people and our medical community when we protect our hospitals, especially in rural America. We've got to do better at that. And it's a very visible change you'll see with my administration. I can also say I'm going to push the lawsuits against the responsible actors affecting the overdose crisis in our state. We've got to do better at promoting a culture of long-term recovery, using our human rights laws, our ADA, the state ADA, to protect people in long-term recovery, get people back into the workforce, back with their families. That's how you turn the battleship on the addiction crisis across our country. And the attorneys general in the states can push for vocational rehabilitation, for public housing, for private employer accommodation and support for people in long-term recovery. The two biggest barriers for people to succeed with long-term recovery are the stigma and the unaffordability of treatment. And the attorneys general can play a big role in destigmatizing people in long-term recovery and helping to ensure access to services and treatment. The addiction crisis is killing our citizens, thousands of them just in West Virginia and probably millions across the country. So the Attorney General in West Virginia will play a much more instrumental and visible role in solving that terrible problem in our state if I'm the Attorney General.
Are there any of his policies that you would continue? Has he done anything right?
He made a big commitment to increase the transparency for letting out public contracts for legal work in West Virginia. I generally support that. I want there to be transparency in contracting for legal services with the state of West Virginia. I think that's important and I believe in it, and I'll try to do that as well. I don't think he's actually adhered to that commitment like he said he would, but there's a lot of business that the states contract out, you know, to do with the bar. There needs to be some transparency and accountability there. There's a lot of money, public money, that moves through those relationships. And I'm committed to transparency in that realm. And the Morrissey ran on that principle, I'm not saying he's really done very well at adhering to it.
How big of a team does the Attorney General employ in West Virginia?
Well, the Attorney General indirectly supervises probably hundreds of lawyers across the state government. He has a smaller staff of direct employees that handle antitrust and consumer protection, criminal appeals, and some other defensive matters for the state, serving as counsel of the state. So, you know, really probably roundabout, I'm going to say maybe 100 and some employees that he directly manages. It varies year to year. And unfortunately, we've seen less advocacy from the Attorney General than we used to see. So I'd like to grow those numbers, but it's not a major agency in West Virginia. You don't have thousands of employees, but you do play a very important role in advising the lawyers across the agencies of the state and providing advisory opinions to the state agencies. So it's got a very broad reach, even though not quite so many direct employees.
What sort of people would you want to bring in along with you?
The employees in the Attorney General's office in West Virginia are actually will and pleasure employees. I don't think they should be treated that way, and I regret that it's been that way historically. So I have a lot of respect, and I know I've worked with many of the consumer protection lawyers who are working in the AG's office now. Many of them were there under the prior Democratic Attorney General. So I think continuity is important. I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I would try to bring in some new people, obviously, to beef up areas of advocacy on civil rights, on antitrust enforcement, on some other matters regarding infrastructure and economic development, where I think the Attorney General has been a little bit light. So I'll bring in a new team at the executive level and probably try to do some hiring in partnership with the legislature. You never want to shake things up too much when you come into an office like this, because there's a lot of institutional memory, and I want to promote a better culture of service and results for our people. But that's my approach. There will be some change. There will be some new focus. But we've got a lot of good civil servants in our consumer protection office. I know them. I trust them. And I want them to know that I'll be there to work with them.
Sam, what have I not asked you about that you would like to be asked about?
I'd love for people to join this campaign. If they would, they can sign up and follow us. I hope what people hear in my discussion here today is that the concerns that we're addressing politically and substantively in West Virginia are concerns that are affecting states across the country, not just in the Appalachian states, but really across the Midwest and across our rural states. The overdose crisis, post-industrial redevelopment, broadband infrastructure, land use, a lot of significant challenges in rural America are within my focus in this race. And I hope that people will sign up on my website to follow what I do, how I win the race and what I do when I govern. I want to have a dialogue with other rural states around America. We have common concerns, and I view my race as being really significant to that national conversation. So if people would sign up, samforwv.com, samforwv.com, I'd love the chance to make this an ongoing dialogue. I think we got connected by some friends from New Hampshire. You know, I've been up to New Hampshire. I've been up to Vermont. I know people in both of those states. We have a remarkable similarity all across this country when it comes to rural development and rural economic matters. So I hope to make that point and hope to say, I've studied this for a long time. I've worked. I was a geographer by training. I understand sort of the dynamics of rural development, and I hope my race can promote an ongoing conversation to bring West Virginia and our other rural states forward together.
If you think about your race in the context of the 2020 election, a pivotal election for the country and maybe for the world, how does it fit in? What's the meaning in your race in that context?
Well, Patrick Morrissey is the ringleader of the rightward-most faction of the Republican Party nationally. He has tried to stymie the Democratic Party in anything and everything they do. And if he wins, I don't care what it is that any Democrat tries to do in this country, Patrick Morrissey will be there in our courts to try to stop him. And it's not a sensible approach. It's not an issue-based approach. It's a purely partisan approach that is harming the country, really, in the world. And it's harming the Republican Party because it's mindless and it's dangerous. And it's, you know, detrimental to healthcare and public health. Morrissey sued to repeal the Clean Power Plan, the Affordable Care Act. That's the relevance of this race. When we beat him in West Virginia, we're going to show that his approach is the wrong approach for the Republican Party anywhere and everywhere. And that's significant. We have to start delivering that message to the Republican Party because they're on a dangerous track for this country. I'm independent as a hog on ice. I always say I'm running as a Democrat, but I want for our country to get back to, you know, to solving problems and protecting our people and building a new industrial policy, you know, getting America to be more productive again. We've got to do that. We've been stuck in a funk as a nation. I'm 36 years old, you know, and I think a lot of people in my age bracket have watched our nation kind of spiraling and sputtering without a new energy policy, without a real comprehensive and effective healthcare approach. The Affordable Care Act moved us in a good direction. We've got a lot farther to go, and I hope that my race will send a message to the Republican Party that they should be a part of those solutions. That's the significance, and I think because Trump won by such a vast majority. He won with 68, almost 70% of the vote in West Virginia in 2016. If he wins West Virginia again, it'll be with much less support. And I hope that my race will telegraph a better approach for the industrial Midwest and, frankly, for both the Democratic and the Republican parties. We've got to do better. And that's what I want my race to represent. I think it's what I'm doing. And I hope you hear when I discuss how we're putting together a majority with this race, you'll hear the ingredients of some sensible progress going forward.
Well, it's an honor talking to you today. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I'm grateful to you. I know you've been committed to a better public process. I know you're doing a lot with your podcast and in your career to, you know, to bring people together and get our democracy working a little bit better. I think the press has a lot to do with it. And you're an important part of the social media and the public conversation. So I thank your listeners for paying attention to West Virginia. I hope people hear we are not a straight ticket state. We're not a monolithic red state. We are a state that has been caught in the throes of a really hard process with deindustrialization that has hurt a lot of our people. And we've got to stop that. And I hope that people will see that my race can be the beginning of stopping that destruction in the American, you know, Midwest and in Appalachia. It's got to happen. So, you know, I hope you sign up. You'll help us make it happen, buddy. And having me on here, it just means an immense amount to me. I thank you for helping me to share this message with the wider world.
Well, I know the tremendous effort it takes to get out there and run for statewide office and the work that you're putting out. And I honor that and appreciate what you're doing. And I hope it comes out well for you and your state.
Well, we think it will. It's going to be close. So stay tuned. And I really thank you for having me on here. I hope we'll have a conversation maybe next year. and we'll have a lot to celebrate.
That would be great.
That was Sam Petzonk. He's at samforwv.com. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.